Hey everybody, Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast. I want to welcome Prosperity Counseling and Wellness to the show. They are a local St. Louis-based therapy practice that specializes in substance abuse and general counseling. They offer group and individual therapy that is tailored to meet your needs. If you or a loved one is struggling with substance abuse or just feels like they need support, contact Prosperity Counseling and Wellness at 636-515-1230. You can find more information at their website at prosperitystl.com. If you're struggling out there or need somebody to talk to, reach out. Prosperity Counseling and Wellness, right here in St. Louis. Hey everybody, this is Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast. I want to tell you about my friends over at Music Record Shop. Find them right here in St. Louis, Missouri, in the Grand Center area, in the Dot Zack building. Go over, check it out, come by and visit them. You can go by or visit online, shop 24/7 at musicrecordshop.com. Be sure to follow along with Music Record Shop on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. They're giving away tickets and records and all kinds of fun stuff throughout the day. So get involved, shop local, support local business. They got a lot of cool stuff going on. So you can also reach out if you have a local band you want to get your records on the shelf over there. Reach out and see how you can make that happen. Again, musicrecordshop.com.
Podcast is kind of like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
This is Endow.
And Karandale Guy, and you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
And that's real talk.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Dirty drunk Hoosier, scabs and all. Dirty drunk Hoosier, reeking of alcohol. Dirty drunk Hoosier with your fading tattoos. Dirty drunk Hoosier, turning, changing the booze. Dirty drunk Hoosier, I was too much like you. 'Cause I was drinking too much and spending my money like a fool. Dirty drunk Hoosier, don't wanna fully become. Because my life's too short to be in jail or a bum. Dirty drunk Hoosier, scabs and all. Dirty drunk Hoosier, reeking of alcohol. Dirty drunk Hoosier with your faded tattoos. Dirty drunk Hoosier, turning, changing the booze. Dirty drunk Hoosier, sitting on a park bench. What's in that brown paper bag is anyone's guess. Could be a needle or a tarnished spoon. It could be a white powder stuck inside a balloon. Dirty drunk Hoosier, scabs and all. Dirty drunk Hoosier, reeking of alcohol. Dirty drunk Hoosier with your fading tattoos. Dirty drunk Hoosier. Hoosier, turning, changing the booze.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri. More specifically, Crondelet, with Crondelet guy, Matt Dauphin. Welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thank you, Shane. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man, this is cool. I'm excited to be here, excited to hang out, and get to know more about what you're up to. I know we've kind of run in the same circles a little bit. I've run into you at the Broadway Oyster Bar a couple of times, and you actually were on this show once before sitting in the back of an episode.
Yeah.
Which I guess we didn't really quite know each other then, so like that was kind of crazy when you told me that story. But we did one over at the Brother Lee house with the guys at Brother Lee and the Leather Jackals and the Wilderness, and for their big party, and you were hanging out that night.
That was my first podcast experience, both as a listener and being in the room.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That was a fun day for sure.
Yeah, man, it was a wild one. We had a good time, and then those guys become real good buddies of mine. And since then, Bobby's done a solo one, Dan's done a solo one too.
Dan's done a solo one too.
Yep.
Yeah, I knew Bobby did one.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then all the Brother Lee guys also have done. Danny's done that Rat episode. Sean did a solo episode, and Josh did a solo episode, and. So it's really fun for me, let alone to talk about the band, but also get to individual stories along the way and stuff. So like, and Sean, like that his was really a lot of fun for me. Like just to, I got him to do like 3 live acoustic songs, and he sang, and like it was just like not a lot of people get to hear him sing. So it was
cool.
Capture that.
Yeah, that was a fun day. Bobby Stevens and Dan Johannian are like my sweethearts,
yeah.
my best friends, and I didn't know Brother Lee at that time. And me, Dan, Johannian, and Bobby Stevens were just like already drinking somewhere, and they said I could tag along. They're going to some guy's named Brother Lee and Larry Jackal's house for a recording, and there'd be a good time had.
For sure.
And so I just tagged along. That was kind of one of my first times meeting Brother Lee, actually. And that was a fun day.
Yeah, man. Well, like I said, we are here in Crondelet area with... Crondelet guy, I'm guessing you were telling me you grew up just around the corner from where you're living at here now, right?
Yeah, I appreciate you saying we're here in St. Louis, but more specifically we're in Crondelet.
Yeah.
Because that we are. Yeah, I grew up just like 3 minutes away from the house that we're recording in right now, Chill Dog Cove. It's a great neighborhood. I've been kind of obsessed over it since I was old enough to be obsessed over things, and so I've been living in this neighborhood my entire life, and somehow it incorporated its way into my songwriting.
Yeah. When do you actually become Crondelet guy?
When I first started trying to play like shows solo, it was one of my first ones. I think it was at Lemons, Old Bar Lemons. That someone put me on a bill to try out my kind of like solo stuff, and I didn't have a name yet. I didn't know what to tell them. And they knew that I was kind of obsessed over my neighborhood, so someone just put me on the bill as Crondelet guy.
Yeah.
And didn't tell me. And I saw it like in print in the RFT. It was like, Crondelet guy is opening up for blah, blah, blah at Lemons. And I was like, well, I guess that's my stage name now. So, I didn't have any qualms with it, so I just kind of went ahead and rolled with it.
Sure.
It made sense.
Yeah. So you were previously in bands and stuff? You said it was your first solo show?
Yeah. When I was a kid, I mean, we wanted to be punk rock superstars since the age of 12.
Right.
So plenty of dumb, stupid, bullshit kiddie punk rock bands growing up. I think my first band ever was called Home by 10 when I was 12. Because we had to be home by 10. eventually, I never really thought I was going to be good at being, like, in a band or anything, because I'm not a great musician by any means. But I started something in college called the Ghetto Tumbleweeds, a band with one of my best friends. And we were kind of doing this, if anyone's familiar with Drag the River, which was is a good band of two different songwriters. We were listening to them a lot, and we wanted to start a band where it was two... He had his songs, and I had my songs. And we would accompany each other and go back and forth kind of thing. Kind of just like drunken country songs. And the Ghetto Tumbleweeds had a short run, and it was fun. But eventually he moved out of town, and Ghetto Tumbleweeds just kind of stopped and ended. And I remember going through a dull period of like, I liked those songs that I had, and I wanted to continue to play those songs and make them better because they were still just half figured out kind of stuff. So when Ghetto Tumbleweeds took a split, I wanted to continue the songs, my half of the Ghetto Tumbleweed songs. So, so I started to continue to play those songs, going to open mics and just randomly trying things here and there. And I think my first time of knowing that I wanted to like do my solo thing by myself, I just stumbled into Heavy Anchor, which is one of my favorite bars in St. Louis.
Yeah.
I just stumbled in there one night with some friends, not knowing they had an open mic night. And it turns out it was Fred Friction in his Chippewa Chapel. Fred Friction, local drunk poet, songwriter. Back alley gambling hustler.
Right.
He had open mic night and there was no one there. And so I just walked back there and put my name on the list. And he let me go up there and do it. And so I went up there and tried out those old Ghetto Tumbleweed songs that I hadn't played in a few months since we broke up. And it felt good. And I segued from one song into Velvet Underground's Waiting for My Man. And Fred Friction, like, got on stage and was, like, reeked of alcohol and was, like, singing the vocals with me. And, like, I kind of looked up to that dude. He was, like, on KDHX. He had his own show, and I loved the bands he was playing.
Yeah.
And his KDHX show. And all of a sudden, he's, like, singing backing vocals with me on a Velvet Underground cover, and I was like, this is pretty cool, and yeah. It's over, and he was just like, you've got it, man. Like, you've got what it takes. And for some reason, I believed him. he gave me a little kick in the ass to keep going. And ever since then, that's when I decided to keep writing solo and not worry about Ghetto Tumbleweeds anymore. And
yeah.
Crown of that guy came shortly after.
Nice, man.
Yeah.
So is this all... You know, you were saying kind of starting in the punk bands and stuff, and pick up a guitar pretty young then, I guess?
Yeah, when I was like 15 or 16, I got a bass guitar. It was a piece of shit, but I got a bass guitar. And for anyone who doesn't know, I'm left-handed, and when I got that bass guitar, I taught myself how to play a right-handed guitar upside down instead of doing things right. And having it restrung,
yeah.
I just took a right-handed guitar and flipped it over. So I still do that to this day. But yeah, got a bass guitar, and it was more or less just me standing in a mirror listening to Rancid and trying to look cool.
Yeah.
And lip-singing to their songs as opposed to being good at it. But I figured out good four-chord Ramone shit, and that's where I'm at today. Yeah. I just figured out how to add more style to it, I guess.
All right. You ever like a musical family or anything like that, or was it just something?
I was blessed with not so much a whole family, but I was blessed with an older brother who got me started real early.
Yeah.
With good music right away. I was always sharing his stuff, you know. So from a very young age, he was already saying, "You need this, you need this," and everything he said was right from the early ages of ska to the little bit older into fuck you punk rock, and then everything that comes after that to this, you know, to current day when he's still showing me new things. Sure. But
I my cousin Jeff was that for me, man. He introduced me to a bunch of great stuff or when I was like, you know, before that it was a lot of my parents' stuff, which is still great music, but a lot of you know, Southern Rock, ZZ Top, Skinner, Allman Brothers. And,
sure, you know, fuck yeah.
Clapton and
I'll things. Give my dad credit for that. The KC-95
sure.
side of me is definitely a strong thing for sure. Good classic rock, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then my cousin Jeff introduced me to some other stuff, like heard Eazy-E with him, and I remember Pink Floyd's The Wall.
Yep.
And like some different stuff. Like, I mean, he and I just have these vivid memories of, you know, cruising around with him in his car and listening to those records and stuff. And like,
Eazy-E's a big one for me. Like, I'm kind of obsessed over Eazy-E, honestly. Yeah. My brother was always great from the get-go of showing me every slice, whether it was old school hip hop, right, or, you know, pavement weird indie stuff, or it was, you know, whatever, the ska, or it was reggae, or, you know, whatever the case may be, country music. He was a pretty driving force.
Yeah, man.
Yeah,
I'm sure all that, like, you know, it's cool that you have that much wide range of influences. You know, you listen, you're taking in all those different, you know, all the different flavors of music and stuff, and then kind of finding your own path in it.
Yeah, for sure. I've always been infatuated with songwriting, and like Eazy-E has that, you know, and like Stephen Malcolmus from Pavement has that. Hank Williams has that. Old blues things are like my favorite, you know, like old blues musician, but it's, or old R&B guys, your Bo Diddley's, your Chuck Berry's, your Little Richard's, you know, like the dudes that are telling you a story. It's all interchangeable. Like, it really is. Old blues music, old country music, punk rock. It's, you know,
sure,
in my eyes, it's all interchangeable.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. I love the storytelling aspect of it. Like, that's the one thing I've always really, you know, as I've grown into my own taste of music and stuff, like, it's one thing I've really responded to was a lot with singer-songwriters and that the storytelling of it, you know, and like, so.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're saying, man, when I listen to your record now, like, there's definitely stories to be told in there, you know, like, throughout the songs and stuff. It's not, you know, you just... Basically, I feel like you're like just kind of telling the story exactly how you saw it or whatever, you know, like it's kind of a real life event kind of thing. And
yeah, well, again, when you play guitar upside down, left-handed, you got to focus on something else besides your guitar style. So, so I guess songwriting was what, like, you know, I used to always try to match singers' voices when I was younger. Like, that was a thing I used to always do, was try to, whatever genre it was, I'd try to match their voice and find range and stuff. So, yeah, I focus more on the verbal stuff as opposed to, I can't give you a ZZ Top riff as much as I would fucking want to.
Sure.
Give you a Billy Gibbons riff, I can't do it. Yeah.
Man, I got to see him, I've seen him live a couple times, but I saw him live once in the family arena there.
Okay.
And, he's just the coolest, man. Like, Billy Gibbons is like...
He's one of the best guitar players that is alive.
For sure, but he's like the epitome of cool, like, just like the way he carries himself and everything, and like, and he was always sticks with me still, like, he told a story about they had like the day off in St. Louis and they went to the zoo, and at the time we had like a anteater that had babies or something like that, and so he's like telling this whole story, like, it's like, yeah, we went to the zoo and there's, you know, there was a mama anteater and his daddy anteater, and not his baby anteater, you know. And it's just like, you know, such
kind of nailed that impersonation.
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's such a simple
throw
story.
A da-da-da-da-da behind it.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I just saw him this summer, the KC's 50th anniversary part, right, with ZZ Top and Sammy Hagar, and he kind of dialed it in, but it's still Billy. It was great.
Sure,
I'd actually never seen them before, I don't think, which seems odd because I own at least 3 ZZ Top records and love them to death.
Yeah,
but yeah, just saw them a couple months ago and it was great.
Yeah, it's still doing it, man.
Yeah.
Like I said, I mentioned your record. You do have a this came out October,
just about 1 year today. Yeah.
Yeah.
1 year last October. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a Real Talk is available everywhere, digitally on iTunes, Bandcamp, and all that stuff. You can get physical copies all over St. Louis at your record stores, your vintage vinyl. You said you did a record live in store over there, the record store, and left some there. And you can find them also at Music Record Shop, proud sponsor of Rock Paper Podcast.
Sweet.
And Euclid and Planet Score. So
yep,
head on out and grab a copy of that. And of course, any shows coming up too, you can. You can grab one there, I'm sure, right?
Yep, always. Yeah. Yep.
But we're going to share some tunes with you today from that record and give you a little taste. We did a couple live here, and one of them being Mighty Mississippi. You got any tunes or any stories around this tune?
Mighty Mississippi, that was... It started off, it was a Ghetto Tumbleweed song that has since I added much more to it, but it was an early Ghetto Tumbleweed song that never quite got finished, and it's the first track on my album, Real Talk, 7-inch, it's the first track on there. Yeah, it's it was kind of finished on my front porch, and it was very much Crandallet driven. It's a story of the things you would see if you just drove in my neighborhood for 5 minutes. You'd see all of it: hookers, hobos, junkies. My next door neighbor, Mr. Henry, makes an appearance on it. It's just kind of a day in the life of me walking down the street. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, man.
Living by the river on Minnesota Street, I've got the baddest old neighbors to the left and right of me. I got Mr. Henry on my right, giving me that real talk. And I had Larry on my left, he jammed in his garage 4 hours. It was the summer in St. Louis, it got hotter than hell. People getting frustrated, yeah, I could tell. I had hookers, hobos, junkies roaming my streets, trying to find some shade so they could beat the heat. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mighty Mississippi, come take me away. Take me all the way on down to New Orleans. Mighty Mississippi, swallow me down with your waves. Drag me to the river floor, I'll stick my toes in the big muddy. Now the line at the scrapyard was a mile long, and if you cut in line you wouldn't last at all. They were cashing in their copper and aluminum cans to score some dope, and some high life was the only plan. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Mighty Mississippi, come take me away. I've got the kind of debt Lord knows that I can't pay. And if I don't pay, they're gonna put me away. They'll lock me up, I'll never see the light of day again. Again. Mighty Mississippi, come take me away, and take me all the way on down to New Orleans. Mighty Mississippi, swallow me down with your waves, and drag me to the river floor. I'll stick my toes in the big muddy. Drag me to the river floor, I'll stick my toes in the big muddy.
You mentioned Mr. Henry, he's on the cover with you there too?
Yeah, he's my best dude. The album title, Real Talk, I got from him when I had first kind of moved into this deep, deep Crandallet neighborhood that I'm at now. I've always lived close to Crandallet, but now that when I moved in like 6 years ago to the neighborhood, he was my first next door neighbor. And while I'm bringing my pillows and, you know, bags and furniture inside, I have this neighbor who comes up to me and just like, hey, how are you? I'm Henry. And hey, I'm Matt. How are you? First question. I mean, like, then he blinks. And then his next question was, do you drink? Right. And my answer was, excessively. And right away, he just goes, then we're going to be just fine. Ever since then, he's been my best friend and next door neighbor. And yeah, so I actually have him on the track. He comes on when the first track is over.
Yeah.
So he's a big part of the record. You know, it's named after a phrase that he always said, which is real talk. Meaning, like, I'm not bullshitting you kind of thing. Shoot you straight. So, yeah, he's kind of a big part of the record. He's all over the artwork, and that makes him happy as fuck. So
yeah, man. Yeah. Very cool. You said this was also on Do What Records. So
correct.
So that was cool that they helped you out putting this record together.
Yeah, it's a good friend of mine since I was a kid. I'm in another band called the Chill Dogs. And he's the drummer of Chill Dogs, and he started a record label not too long ago, about 2 years ago. And the first album he put out was the Chill Dogs, our record. And since then, he's put out about 5 or 6 records from some bands in Chicago, where he lives now. The record label is kind of based out of Chicago now. But it was started here in Crown de Lette. And he started a label called Do What Records, which is named after our friend DJ, who we called Do What. Because if you ask him any question, his answer is always, do what? So the artwork for the label is our friend DJ. And yeah, it's a high school picture of him in his wrestling outfit. And yeah, so the album's also available. If you just go to Do What Records, you can find it there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is this the debut release for Crown de Lette Guy? Or do you have some other stuff out there? Or is this...
I've been on a few compilations leading up to this. It's my first solo record, yes.
Yeah.
But before the solo came out, I was on a 7-inch split with some people, Matt Harnish in particular, who's in a famous, legendary St. Louis band called Bunny Grunt. He had his 45th birthday a couple years ago, and for his 45th birthday, he asked 6 bands to make a 45-second long song, and he was going to put it out on a 45-inch record, and there was one more 45 behind it. And that's how he works. Everything's a series of numbers. But so yeah, I was on his 7-inch, and I was on also a compilation from Pancake Productions, where it was all songs about pancakes. And he asked, the guy who owns the label asked everyone to write a song about pancakes. And I, you know, I think we might hear that later on.
Yeah, you played that one live also with me today. You titled
Uncle Bill's.
Uncle Bill's.
Yeah, yeah. It's about throwing up in Uncle Bill's pancake house's bathroom.
Who hasn't been there, you know?
Sure, right. After a long night of drinking, I made a real bad decision. I ended up at Uncle Bill's. Uncle Bill's Pancake House. And I threw up in their bathroom. Put my face on the cold, cold floor. Chris tapped me on my shoulder. And then she told me what I owe her. And I gave her a 20 and said, keep the change. She shot me a smile and then she walked away. I've been on a few other things before the 7-inch came out, but this is my first time putting a record out.
Yeah.
Pretty
cool, man. Is there working on some other stuff too? Or are you trying the follow up for this?
Yeah. So Real Talk is, you know, it's two songs on both sides. It's only four songs. And I've got a lot of old songs that I've changed multiple times, and I have a handful of new songs and all this stuff. So there's definitely another record coming out for sure. Real Talk was stripped down. I wanted to just do it on my own, and that way there's no going backwards kind of thing. It was just like there's nothing but forward momentum.
Right.
And I wanted to see, I think where I really shine is when you see me in a basement or in a living room or in a backyard, unplugged and just, spitting at you, like right in your face kind of thing. But I do want to take it to, full band kind of stuff. But for the record, Real Talk, when it came out, I wanted to keep it bare bones.
Sure.
And just me and a guitar and see if that could tread water kind of thing. And see if it would stand up on record as opposed to when you do see me in a backyard or in a living room or something. And the response has been really, really fucking great. So, when I play live shows, I'll switch it up. I have people sit in. I've done full band before. I've done just a violin player. I've done just a harmonica player. I've done just a squeeze box player. Cool. I like you to not know what I could do kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just get weirder and weirder every time. But yeah, in the future for another record, I'd like to have, some more accompaniment for sure.
Cool, man. I did see a video of you singing on the roof of a house, singing one of the songs off of this record. Also, the day my drug dealer went to jail?
Yeah, that's the drug dealer song.
Yeah.
That roof that I'm sitting on is the guy who owns that Pancake Productions record label, and he puts a festival together in U City every year where these bands all play his backyard. And he has three stages. One's the roof, one's his garage, and one's just the backyard.
Yeah.
So you don't have to go too far to see a show, to catch a set. But, the people who filmed that did a really great job. I'm drawing a blank on that production company. But they did a really good job of multiple angles and all this stuff.
Yeah, I thought it turned out real nice. It was just funny hearing that story and hearing that song, because you mentioned, there's a part where you mentioned Schwagstock.
Yeah, yeah. And, that always gets a laugh. It's when I watch that video, it's always takes me off guard every time I play of when bursts of laughter break out. Yeah. I'm not writing jokes, sure. But I know I'm writing some kind of backhanded stuff, whatever. But
well, I think it's relatable. That's the thing. People know. Either they've been there or have a buddy that, or something like that, they can connect to that, those different lyrics.
Right. It's funny when I get laughs randomly here and there, and it's not that they were meant to not be funny, but it's, that video is a good case in point of a burst of laughter breaks out when I say something, and I was like, oh shit.
Well, I just think it's cool because
they're listening.
Still to date, Jimmy Tebow is my number one episode on Rock Paper Podcast. So, and we talked a lot about swag stocks and stuff, and what and him going to jail and everything else.
Oh, really? Yeah. He's been on. That's crazy. Really?
Yeah. We hung out for like an hour and a half, and I hardly said couple words, and I just let him, I push record and let him tell all the stories, and he opened up and shared everything. And
oh, I'm sure he could write a book.
Yeah, yeah. It was fascinating, man. Like, I mean, from, you know, like, and he also played two live acoustic tunes on there, but it was really cool, like, just kind of capture those moments, hear that story about, you know, especially the stuff about him going to jail, because, like, you know, I knew he'd been arrested, but I didn't know some of the details, but he opened up about all of it, and it was cool, man. So
yeah, dang, that'd be a good listen. Yeah.
So if you want to hear some more stories about Schweigstock besides puking up your teeth and on ecstasy and stuff.
Yeah, like, never been myself, yeah. But yeah, that was his story.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never been either, but it was definitely something, you know, being around here, everybody talked about it. But
for sure. I've been on, like, and it's always like during a camping summer, like where everyone goes camping. Right. It's in a very central place where anyone goes to camp. I know that I was like going somewhere to camp somewhere else.
Sure.
And we were, you know, riding dirty. Yeah. And we got stopped. Like, they were just like stopping people just because you drove in that town.
Yeah.
It's like, dang. Whatever. So we got pulled over, and you see people throwing joints out their windows and like trying to hide stuff, whatever. And like they stop us. We're like, we're not going to Schweigstock, we swear. But still, don't search the car.
Yeah. It's cool, man. We have to definitely check that out.
No, I guarantee that's a good lesson. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned some of your shows that seeing you live, and you can come see Crondelet Guy November 22nd at the Livery Company, and it's kind of a big party going on over there called The Burning of the Grass Part 3, you said. So they invite you out, and it's going to be, along with a bunch of others, you'll have Brother Francis and the Soul Tones, the Holy Posers, and Drew Jameson, a friend of the show also. And so that'll be fun.
I think there's like six other bands on that bill too, so I'm pretty sure it's an all-day affair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a good party, man. And like I said, it's a... what's this? Yeah, it's the Thanksgiving Eve, right?
It is the day... Yeah.
So
I never turn down a show at Livery because it's two blocks from my house, and I can walk, skateboard, bike ride there. And then Uber home.
Sure. So if you don't have any plans, come on over there. Definitely November 22nd to Livery Company. We also played another you wanted to play another one called Rare Breed, and this is off, this will be the cut from the record. I did see another video on YouTube of you playing this song live, and you kind of shared some of the story around that one. This is more of kind of a true story also, right? Like kind of based around some events and stuff, right?
Yeah, it was one of my first times messing around with like mostly fact and then incorporating fiction, like incorporating just a little bit of storytelling and fiction behind it. But I used to live in Springfield, Missouri. That's where I went to college for 5 years. And I worked at a homeless teenage center called Rare Breed. And that was the name of the place. And it was a really, went to school for sociology, and it's pretty rewarding, you know, place to work at. I was a homeless teenage center, and the song is about the meanest, toughest fucking kid that was there, and he didn't ever share a blink at you, and was just always in trouble and doing this or that. And all of a sudden, one day, we went like on a field trip to some hospital, and it was about, I forgot, the actual theme of the field trip was kids that were, it had something to do with being like abused kids that didn't have a chance to begin with, and they had passed away. It was a pretty, really heavy day. It's hard to describe what the event was, but we were going there with these teenagers who had survived past that moment that we were there to mourn. And it hit this kid, the meanest, baddest motherfucker that went, you know, to this shelter. It hit him hard real quick, and all of a sudden I kind of see him just take off and walk a different way and light a cigarette. Meanwhile, he was like 15. I was like, cool. He's smoking a cig already? Good for you, man. So was I. So I followed him, and I just could tell he needed something. I didn't know what it was, but I just followed him, and I was like, you all right, dude? Like, our first interaction ever, and the kid just started bawling like in front of me and opened up. everything, like, real quick. And it was very honest and genuine and very, took me off guard and whatever. And, like, I broke my cigarettes out, too. And now I'm smoking a cigarette with a 15-year-old kid telling me all this heavy shit. And yeah. I didn't blink an eye at it. It just seemed normal. And he told me a lot of shit. And so the song is a lot of his story. And then I threw in a few things.
Sure. Yeah, man, that's some heavy stuff for you know, compared to some of the other subject matter on the record. But
yeah, and I write it poppy just to take away from how you know, fucked up it really was. But
right, I always laugh about that, like how that line in Robin Hood, Men in Tights. You know, like, when, if you could just tell me the good news or the bad news in a good way.
Yeah.
I feel like. That's a lot of how these, I mean, you get these, a lot of these songs like that, like, you know, the music will lead you to believe it's happy and stuff, but yeah, you get into the lyric content and you realize, oh, man, that's messed up, so.
Yeah, like, I'm obsessed over, like, John Prine and the Lemonheads and, like, which are completely different from each other, like, old folk songwriter, country guy, and,
sure.
You know, 90s kind of alternative fun stuff, but, like, they're writing morbid stuff and they're adding humor without losing integrity and, like, heart. It's a thin line.
Yeah.
And I never try to write humor, to be quite honest. I really don't ever try to make a song funny. I don't. I get a lot of laughs on stage, whether I'm falling over or what the songs are themselves, but that makes me think I did something right, you know, if I get a good laugh.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I wrote a good song.
So, for sure, man.
Yeah.
One thing I did want to ask you about, too, is I did, being that I follow you online, which I recommend everybody else, go follow the Crondelet guy on Facebook to keep up with dates and things there. And I saw a picture of you, your profile picture is with RZA, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's been my same profile picture for about 4 years now.
Yeah. How'd that happen? Where'd you end up meeting him at?
Through my job and through the game of chess. Yeah. Game of chess. I work at a place it's a museum for chess here in St. Louis. And RZA's a big chess guy.
All right.
And we had an exhibit that was intersection of chess and hip-hop, which is very prominent with each other. Everyone in hip-hop, all good characters in hip-hop mention chess, whether it's Fugees, Nas, Biggie, Wu-Tang Clan, you name it. But Wu-Tang is, they are professional chess players. And so he came to our hip-hop and chess opening. And before the opening, he gave a talk to a bunch of about 12, 14-year-old kids in an auditorium in North City, about 300 of them, at the Demetrius Johnson Foundation. And he gave a cool speech about, it was like right when Mike Brown situation had just started.
Yeah.
Not that situation has just started, but right when the Mike Brown situation had just started. Same timing, RZA's in town. He gives this great speech to a gymnasium full of 300 kids in North City about life and how to incorporate, and in hindsight, I mean, how chess can relate to life and, like, knowing your place on the board and knowing who's your enemy and knowing who's your opponent and knowing how to address them. And it was a really profound thing. But either way, I met him through work.
Yeah.
And when we got, like, backstage, he was giving some real talk. And I had to sneak a picture. Because it's RZA and I love Wu-Tang.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was that sounds awesome. I mean, despite the unfortunate situation, but
yes.
I mean, the fact that, like, I mean, just to imagine that would be really...
He was there for the hip-hop exhibit,
yeah.
And, like, for our opening, but it was the same time, so he took it upon himself to find the time to speak to a school that, you know, needed to hear some kind of real talk.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Speaking of real talk, you said you wanted to bring in a special guest.
Yeah.
You want to do that?
I think it's time to pull Mr. Henry out of the closet and let him come. he's next door.
Yeah.
With Miss Pam.
Let's see what Mr. Henry's up to.
All right.
All right. I want to welcome our special guest this evening, Mr. Henry, from the front cover of Real Talk. You can see him there pictured with a Crondelet guy. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you.
Matt was sharing some stories with me earlier about you guys being neighbors and some of that whole process, how you guys met and stuff. But you tell me you recorded on the record and you guys did a little bit with that process.
I told him the story
yeah.
of when I first moved in.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, here comes a neighbor while I'm moving my bed and my dresser and my couches and my pillows.
That's correct. That's correct.
All of a sudden, someone comes up to me and says, Hey, man. How are you, sir? Do you drink? And I said, excessively.
I say, well, you gonna be cool over here.
Yeah.
Next door neighbor.
Yeah.
I'm keeping it real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then Matt and let me see, that was Matt first. Matt
and John.
And John.
Yep.
First. And Tim and Mike came. It was four of them.
Four of them.
Four of them.
One of them was Mike, the Mike being the Ghetto Tumbleweed, the other half of the Ghetto Tumbleweed.
He was cold. He was cold with that guitar too.
Yeah.
He was cold.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
You,
my brother. That's my brother, too.
Yeah? So how long you guys have been friends now and neighbors?
6 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's six, seven, eight. I don't know. It's there. I said about 20.
Well, brothers from another mother.
Exactly. So, that's it.
A whole lifetime.
Exactly. Yeah, I met the mom, the dads, the sisters, the brothers, the nieces, the nephew. I'm Uncle Henry.
Yeah.
Uncle Henry.
I'm there
Uncle
you Henry. Go. Yep. So we like to we mentioned you being on the cover of the record and recording on the record. What was it? You guys had a good time doing that process?
Oh, yes, sir. Yeah. Yes, sir.
You remember that day?
He started it all. We were just sitting up here messing around. He was messing around. And he said, Henry, just hit this one note. And I just kept hitting it. And he made some out of it. I said, damn, you a bad motherfucker. I shit you not. That's how I went.
Yeah, he said you inspired the title, too, The Real Talk. He said,
Okay.
The name of my album is Real
it's
Talk.
Real Talk.
Yeah. And it was the first, real I had this talk. Real big epiphany, Henry. If you know this or not, but like Real Talk, that when we would bullshit and first start getting drunk together, you would use a phrase instead of saying, like, I'm not fucking bullshitting. I am being honest now.
Real talk.
He would just say Real Talk. I was like, that real motherfucker talk, just man. Summed up how to be honest and a good person and always, like, even if you're lying, still be a good person
exactly.
about it.
You did.
In two words. He said Real Talk and he meant it. And, like, it was really endearing. It was like,
that's it right there.
Yeah.
That sums it up right there. That's the word Real Talk.
Yeah.
I ain't finna shoot you no lie.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And you ain't gonna shoot me now.
Real talk.
You did.
All right.
And that's real talk.
Definitely, man.
If I don't like you, I don't like you.
Yeah.
That's real talk.
You ever play Mr. Henry?
No, sir.
No?
No, sir.
That's not true. I got you on tape. Me and you sat around one night and we wrote that song.
Trying.
Drunk as a Skunk, we wrote that song about.
Yeah.
So on the Real Talk album, the first song, My Mississippi, I say a lyric. I got Mr. Henry on my right, giving me that real talk. And I got Larry on my left, jamming in his garage. We had this neighbor, Larry. Henry was on my right. And that day when Henry came to me and said, do you drink? And I said, excessively. He's like, we gonna be fine. Not 2 minutes later, Larry comes from the left and he goes, y'all smoke?
And that's real talk.
And I said an answer. And he goes, we're gonna be just fine. Like, I guess I'm comfy cozy on left and right. I got two pillows to cuddle on. But Larry used to jam in his garage. He was an old neighbor that we miss dearly. That would literally play piano. He'd play two pianos at one time. One was rhythm and like full band, and one was like solo piano sound. But like one piano was playing like a full music band, and he had a voice of a Marvin Gaye. I mean, Stevie Wonder. If he wanted to, he could go high. He could go low.
That's
up
true.
And down. And like we started booking him at shows that I was booking because he was so good. I had this neighbor all
sure
of a sudden.
Did.
I had this neighbor that could play, and I would listen to him play in his garage. He'd be by himself for hours, playing in the garage, and I'd turn all the music off and just sit in the backyard and listen to him. I booked him at some shows with us, like at Lemons, at Heavy Anchor. We've mentioned both of these bars already. And people loved it. Best cover you'll ever hear of I Want to Know What Love Is.
Dig it.
But he was a great character, and we don't know what happened to him. The legend on the street is that he either lives on Illinois Street or in the state of Illinois. And we don't know which one.
We have no idea. We tried. Now, don't get us wrong.
Yeah.
But we wrote a song. That's where we were going with this. Was that that one night we were jamming, I wrote something, and I was like, Henry, talk some shit over it. And you started, and the song was called Real Talk. Mm-hmm. I want that real talk. It was like Garth Brooks meets like Eazy-E. It was real weird. But I still have it on cassette. I still have the recording of it. It's good.
Yeah.
It's all about Larry.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'd be interested to hear that and hear...
it's great.
Hear what other collaborations
it's come out. It's for sale for $1,000 if somebody wants it. Henry, you get 200.
How cool would
I get 8.
How cool would that?
Yeah. How long have you been over here, Mr. Henry, in the Crumble area?
Let me see. My wife bought that house. I've been, I guess, about 12, 13, 14, 15 years, something else like that.
Yeah.
And it's been the same. Well, when I first got here, well, to keep it real, when I first got to penitentiary, she had already moved there.
She bought the place. Y'all were a couple.
Right, right, right.
You were in the pen. She bought the house. She was writing you from the pen or visiting you saying, I got a new place for us when you get out. And it's a mansion, and it's great. And it's beautiful in spots. It's the Hotel fucking Tangier. And then you get out the pen. You told me plenty of times as soon as you got a pen slot. You said, you got to
be fucking me. You got to be. Shit. That's how that went.
Yeah.
But I did a little changes. You know, it's okay. It's comfortable. It's home.
Right.
You got good neighbors. Shit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank God for them. And that's real fucking to the top. You did.
Yeah, man.
And, other than that, man, it's been okay. It's been okay. You know, everybody gonna have their little ups and downs. Don't get me wrong. Yeah.
Yeah?
My life ain't no... What the fuck you call it?
Fairy tale.
Yeah. This shit is real. Shit.
Yeah, man. Do you know where Real Talk came from? Is that the words that's... Where'd that start for you?
It just came out my mouth.
Yeah?
One day, it just came out my motherfucking mouth. And I've been using it, and I hear it on TV right to this day.
Yeah?
It just came out my mouth. I ain't see it on no TV, I ain't hear it on no radio, or none of that.
Right.
And I watch TV and listen to the radio. One day, it just came out.
Yeah? Yeah, I hear it, I hear it now on, like, you know, hip-hop and songs and stuff. You know, a lot of rappers talking.
That's from me. Yeah. I started. Yeah. I started that.
Yeah, that's what I'm
saying. That's real talk. Real to the fuck to the talk.
We need
I started that word.
We need to get a hold of some lawyers and these royalties.
Right.
Like, people have been cashing in on your sayings and stuff, man. At least,
yeah,
man,
motherfuckers are calling their record real talk.
Yeah.
I'll give you a cut of my record.
Yeah,
I started that word. It just came out.
Yeah, at least Matt put you on the album. And
yeah. I paid my dues.
I bought you that bottle. Remember I asked you, I was like, Henry, if I can record you saying, hey, real that's talk. That real talk,
yeah,
I'll
exactly.
buy a bottle of booze.
Exactly.
And he yelled at me saying, you ain't gotta buy me shit. We brothers, I'll buy you. I'll be on that record no matter what.
Yeah, my word just come out the mouth. Just right. Came out the mouth.
Yeah. would you record on your phone or do you?
I just grabbed my phone because I was in a pinch. Yeah. It had to happen right then and there. Like I recorded my record at Encapsulated Studios with Gabe Ussery.
Yeah.
Who's just the biggest sweetheart in the entire world.
Yeah, I love Gabe.
And I kind of knew what I wanted. I wanted stripped down, you know, just me and my guitar, like acoustic, and the songs and the stories. In my head, I wanted trumpets and trombones and fucking, you know, like a whole marching band and to go crazy and sound bigger than life. But it was my first thing, so I was like, just do what you do live. Like, do what people see you do in the living room.
Mm-hmm.
Do what people see you do on the stage.
You're a bad motherfucker.
Yeah?
You're a bad motherfucker with that guitar right there.
Yeah, we played some right here today in the living room. It sounded real nice. Had a good time.
Yeah,
It's just kind of fun that you can do that kind of stuff though. Like cut those you know, just record from your phone and have it, you know, have that kind of stuff. And like, I, even doing this show, like in the intro, I, obviously it's not my recording, but it's fun to like use those kind of how you did with the, on the record. But like, I cut a clip from, Tusk movie and I put it in the intro to the,
you can do whatever. Yeah, it's and stuff, like, it's cool to scale back and be like, I'm gonna throw in a line from The Simpsons. Yeah, you know, sure. Like, I'm gonna have Bart say something real quick at the very end.
Yeah, you can. It's just fun to like kind of have that mixed media, do all that kind of different stuff with it, and have some fun with. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it was. I thought that was pretty cool that be able to incorporate Henry and then you know, again being on the cover of the record and everything too. So
wasn't hard to find him.
Yeah.
Right next door.
Yeah. Well, very cool. Well, this has been a ton of fun getting to hang with you guys, getting to meet you, Henry. It's a real pleasure.
Same here, sir.
So again, come out and check out Crondelet Guy at Livery Company on November 22nd. Pick up that record, Real Talk, featuring Crondelet Guy and Mr. Henry at your local record stores or Do What Records. .com, you said?
Yep.
And digitally on iTunes, Bandcamp, and all that kind of fun stuff. So get a hold of that record and follow Matt and on as Crondelet Guy on Facebook for more information. But yeah, I appreciate you guys doing this. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
Real to the motherfucking
talk.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.